Okay, first, I'd like to thank for the organizers and especially Professor George Eliot for the invitation to this chance to talk here. I'd like to talk about the spectral triples and transversely elliptic operators. And first, I want to start with just what spectral triples is. And you know, Alan Kahn used spectral triples to refine Riemannian geometry on the smooth manifold. The prototype for such a spectral triple is like this. We look at it's a triple AHD, and the prototype to replace the Riemannian manifold and the Riemannian metric is a triple that A is just the smooth functions on the manifold, the algebra of smooth algebra, and the pointwise multiplication. And H is the L2 sections of the spinner bundles. Sorry, I forgot to mention here. I mean, specifically, I mean a spin manifold. And I would say why we need a spin manifold. And D is a Dirac operator decided by DS. And locally, you can see in a local chart, it's given by basically the derivatives. It's a connection, but basically we just say derivatives and the Clifford multiplication. You can think of locally, they are matrices, and with gamma matrices, when you multiply this, gives you the they are related to the metric. And of course, you can see that it's not so hard. If you have everything, if you suppose you know every detail about your AHD, it's not hard to recover. It's very easy to recover the metric and the manifold. A is just the characters of the smooth algebra. You can another way to do it is you consider the C-star algebras. It's a dense subalgebra of the C-star algebras of the C-star algebra. Of continuous functions on M, and A is just the M is the spectrum of the C-star algebra, and it's not so hard to recover the metric because you can recover the manifold. The smooth structure is probably a little harder, but once you have that, D is locally made by the matrix. The Riemannian metric. So to recover that, you will get you just multiply a gamma matrices to get D. But now we want to decide DS without every detail. Just look at its operator algebra properties and see how much we can how many properties of this triple we assume in order to fully recover the Riemannian metric. Okay, so I will now give a somewhat more formal definition for the spectral triple based on this prototype. Okay, we assume A is now just a topological algebra. It's supposed to be a smooth algebra or something, but we suppose we don't know. And H is I'm talking about the even spectral triple. Like K0, you can talk about K0, K1. I'm talking about the odd case, the even case. So H is a graded Z2 graded Hilbert space, and left A module in the sense that A acts on H by bounded as bounded operators on, and I'll call the grading epsilon because I will need it a little later. And the total type for D is the Dirac operator. So we assume it's an unbounded self-adjoint operator on H. It's a odd degree, so it looks like this on that splitting. And D minus is the adjoint of D plus. For all elements in A, the commutator is bounded, with D is bounded, and in the sense that it's defined in a smaller domain, but it extends to a bounded operator on H. And the fourth property is for unbounded operators, so suppose we know there's a spectrum. In general, we can't assume, but now with this assumption, we know that spectrum are discrete, and it's spread. We can control the pattern of the spreading of the eigenvalues for this, and so we assume that D plus I, just to make it invertible. It's so, you know, one of the ways to just do it, and the D plus I inverse is small in the sense it's compact. First, it has to be compact, and with the first four properties, I can say it's a k-cycle. But I really wanted to control the spread of the spectrum more. I would call it a p-summable condition. So I add the spectral tuple condition also, p-summable spectral tuple. P is the prototype of the number p is the dimension of the base manifold M. And the precise definition is the inverse is in a smaller sub ideal of the, it's not a closed ideal, it's a smaller ideal, just algebra ideal. B of H has an algebra ideal of it's somewhat close to the Chapman class, but a little refinement. And it just says you look at the absolute value of P, make it positive, and they take the nth eigenvalue. In short, we can say it's the nth characteristic number. It's controlled by this one, and controlled by n to the minus 1 over P. But the more intuitive description is the eigenvalue is spread just like I just take the plane RP and take all the integers on RP and take a look at the distance for each integer point, integer grade. I look at the distance to the origin, and that's a number. And I sort all these numbers sort this number from small to large, and this mu n just goes like that number. I mean, oh, sorry. In that case, I have to take the reciprocal. So, okay. What I'm saying is this. Okay, I think I'm not probably. What I'm saying is, I just look at. The prototype is I look at S torus, S cross, P. And I look at the very simple operator, just the And then the spectrum spreads like just the integer grid point. And what I'm saying here is just basically the same. So it's just to make this condition look a little easier. But you just can take the okay, with this, with the spectral triple, we can't recover the metric, Riemannian metric, just from the spectral AHD, such things like this. Kong gave several axioms, and called it the axiom for geometry. Non-commutative geometry, so that with these extra conditions added, you will fully recover the geodesic distance on M. What it says is, you just take the distance, the supreme of the distance between two functions. X and Y are two points, or just characters on the algebra, and you can compute the distance by this condition. And D commutative with F is bounded. It recovers the geodesic distance. And this, for this, you really need the spin manifold, because geodesic distance is very very special. Let me just show you how special it is. If we look at the manifold like this, embedded, there's a surface in that embedded in R3, and the geodesic distance from these two points are the ones, are the distance that traveled from this geodesic going through here. Not the distance, for example, in R3. So it recovers exactly the geodesic distance, the distance defined by the Riemannian metric. So it will recover the Riemannian metric. For that, you really need your metric, your spectral triple to be in some sense pure. For example, you can take direct sum of two spectral triple, and it's still a spectral triple. But then the metric, you cannot say you recover whatever metric exactly. So it's a very precise statement. It is a very precise thing only on the spin manifold. And of course, I have no time, and also not very qualified to give you all these axioms, which takes a long time. But at least some of the axioms we really have to say to check on. So the bow geometry is called spin geometry, just simply because of the spin representation. And the axioms Kong needed was several axioms, and anywhere from 9 to 7, depending how much you require for your spin for your spectral triple. And it includes irreducible spin representation condition. It includes smoothness of the algebra, or regularity of the spectral triple. It's a similar condition. And you really need the actual real structure. And in this sense, it just you can get it. And also, you have to know the pairing between K cohomology and K-theory of A, of the your algebra. So there are a lot of conditions added to your spectral triple to really cover, to recover a pure spectral triple. In general, we can't say too much about, you always get a distance, but it's related to your operator. But it might not be anything you can see on the in the community development management. In general, what you can say is this spectral triple, just with the first four conditions called the K-cycle. Even just as K-cycles, they already decided the conformal class of your metric, in the sense that if it does have a metric on the manifold, if it does have metric manifold, and we have this condition, say conformal, these two matrices, two remaining metrics are called conformal if there's a positive non-zero function, strictly positive, and the smooth function. That they relate to these two remaining metrics, and we say it's a conformal. G prime is in the conformal class of G, and Kang has decided to prove that in case there is a metric, then the conformal class is decided already. And the conformal, in the sense that if you take two vectors, the angle is preserved between the two different metrics. Okay, I think this is a introduction to the spectral triple. And what I'd like to point out is, if you look at Kang's recent paper in 1996, he discussed a lot of geometries on examples on foliation algebras and including non-commutative torus and quantum groups, for example. What I like to do is take a slightly different thing, and it's very much, it looks somewhat very close to the foliation picture, but it's not exactly the same. So I will study the compact V group action on manifold, just on one manifold. And when action is not free, it happens this is also a foliation, so you can also you can view it as a foliation. So I will use this simple example. It's somewhat like a toy example to explain things I want to do later. And this example is like this. I will take S2, the surface S2, with S1 rotation, like on the longitude. And of course, the thing we really want to study is the quotient space, and it's an interval I drew here. It's an interval. And the Riemannian metric, or just the Laplacian, the standard one, just from the three dimensional Euclidean space restricted to the unit sphere, looks like this. If I use the angle phi for longitude and theta for latitude, but I think I had to specify here theta is 0 and here is pi. Of course, you can use the the metric an operator that which is elliptic on the two sphere. But I really want to check is if I can simply use let me make it even simpler, just use the operator, just derivative along theta for the d. Because you see, it obviously works here. And, I mean, except it's a manifold with boundary. So it makes sense now to, if it's possible, it makes sense now if you look at non-elliptic operators, which gives you geometry, possibly, I gave you geometry. And let me digress a little bit. Such orbit spaces of, you know, M mod G, it's a very rich class. For example, it includes all the orbifolds, in particular manifold with boundary and corner. And in general, what you can say is if you take a manifold, the quotient with G, if it GX by finite isotropy, you get an orbifold, but it's more than more. In general, this quotient space is more than more orbifold. We have. I would say we'd like to work on transversely elliptic operators relative to G action defined as below, and the. An example is just like this. This operator, I want to say, it's a transversely elliptic, because it's a elliptic on the direction transverse to the orbit. And the more precise definition is this: we take a differential differential manifold. We take two complex vector bundles, and the G actually I should say G vector bundles. G equivariant, and we have to take a operator P, which is a G invariant. If it's not G invariant, I probably can't do anything. So it's a strong restriction. Like this case, I took one that is a phi invariant, and P, let's say pseudo differential operator. Including a differential operator, and the P is a transversely elliptic. If you look at the transverse directions, in the sense these are defined by this on the tangent bundle of M, there are directions that along the G action, you call it orbit directions, and you look at the perpendicular directions on the cotangent bundle. And these directions, excluding zero, and we look at the symbol of this pseudo differential operator, and we expect that to be invertible. In general, for elliptic ones, we just say for any such C, this is invertible. But now we just, like this case, I just want this direction. We have invertible. No. Actually, I'm quoting the. I look at the quotient, just to. I don't want to work with the quotient. I just want to work. And it turns out there's a very good non-trivial geometric description of this space, the quotient. It's there's a very good replacement for this space, and we use the algebra A, which is a cross product. I mean, if you just say topologically, you can use the C star algebra, but I want smooth cross product algebra. And let me remind you what this algebra means. You just take functions on M cross G, and take somewhat convolution-like product. It's not pointwise multiplication anymore. And you can also view this is a convolution, natural convolution, smooth convolution on the action groupoid, or some people call it transformation groupoid, G. And this groupoid has source and the unit space M, and the source and target are elements on M, and for each G, it gives you an arrow from X to rho G on X. Just each G gives you an arrow. And we take the Hilbert space, just the L2 sections of E and F, and grade it. And we can get a K-cycle this way. And by this very small theorem, it's just an analog to the parametric existence of parametric condition, the theorem on elliptic oscillators, and you can call this micro local parametrics. And it says if for each P there exists an operator Q, a pseudo differential, so that it's almost invertible, so that 1 minus P PQ and 1 minus QP are small in the sense that you if your algebra is unital, you can say they're just smoothing operators. But in my case, when G is not trivial, it's never unital, because the unit would be the delta function at the E, at the identity of the group. So we ask this one. So this is a theorem. I think it's pretty common there. You know, I can't credit it to any person, because it's a you can get it right after the parametric theorem, but it's very important. And okay, then we have a K-cycle then for any elliptic operator. But what we really want is something better, let's say a spectral triple, so more than any elliptic operator, transversal elliptic operator. So this is a construction of the D. So let D be just an odd degree like this, except I don't know it's Dirac. It's G invariant. All the conditions are as before. It's first order differential operator from H to H, and off diagonal in a sense. Like. On the six. On the fixed point of the group action, and it basically asks for at that point it's just it's a local condition. It's just that it's invertible for any x.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and on the other hand, if your action is transitive, so you don't have any condition. You just take an operator and it's transverse elliptic. And the way to explain this is we're viewing something very large, small. So the whole L2 bounded operators, whole two L2 G round operators are small in a sense. We can control it. So if it's symmetric, the trouble with to get a to get the trouble you might get is you don't get always get a spectral triple. One thing is you have to have order one. I mean, you have to have what is differential operator of it's the order, the differential operator, like one, not minus one, two or something, or bounded order zero. And also, it has to be self-adjoint, which is something you don't get. And what we know is if you have a strong, what we know in the non-commutative cases is if you have a strong, you have an elliptic operator of positive order, and if it's symmetric, then it's already self-adjoint. And here, we don't have that, but if you add, let me emphasize, we have the G invariant condition. If with that condition added on, we will get a self-adjoint operator too. Except I have to say, I have to enlarge the domain, first domain, from smooth sections to something larger. But it's straightforward. And then, if these together usually get a spectral triple, a regular spectral triple, I have to say it. I have to explain this a little bit later. So to get a regular spectral, that's the only thing that actually you can compute with. So regular. T is a transversely elliptic of, carried on. Yeah.
There's no conditions on the action?
No, because it's already, if you say transversely elliptic, and it's already strong. Compact. If it's non-compact, I can't say, I can't do all these things.
Up there, where it says spectrum PR, what does the PR mean? What would you say, symmetric with sigma D squared PR?
Oh, the PR, I haven't got that yet. The principal symbol. D squared is also a pseudo-differential operator, and you take its principal symbol.
Okay.
It's a symbol, the height. D squared, we wanted the principal symbol to be scalar. And this condition is also very strong because it basically, you can't think of anything but just something like Dirac operators, except you don't have to have this condition like a spin manifold. You know, it's general Clifford Clifford module. E and F are general Clifford modules. So it's a very strong condition. But it's not so hard to pick what example. It's still there, so many examples I can give. And then we'll have a spectral triple. I think I ignored a lot of the details. So the point is, we can get a lot of regular spectral triples. We can so we can compute their characters and so on. And what next I want to, so this is a. The first thing I want to do after in this talk. The second is I'm trying to give examples and compute the geometries, but really I have this is just an attempt. I can't have state of any theorem which is non-trivial. Like for example, things like trivial actions, you can see everything works, but. The next I want to say is we now we're interested, once we have a spectral proof, can we really compute the Chen Kang Chen character, just say the index theory, index for such operators. And it's for even for geometric, I mean, it's a natural question, but even for geometric purposes, it's still useful, because one of the Kang conditions includes the pairing. You ask the pairing to be from K cohomology and K homology to be non-trivial pairing. So they must. So this this go back. Go, we I want to state something I did in my thesis for the computation of Kang Chen characters, Kang Maskevich local index formula. As you can see, I will show you just a little bit later. So when you compute characters, you often have to do commutators with D a lot, and then with D squared. And so we look at algebra. When this happens, in the commutator case, F is a scalar multiplication, so you always get pseudo differential operators, and you can compute Kang and local index formula just by the symbols of pseudo differential operators, namely just by Wojcicki residue, so it's computable just directly by symbol. But here my F is something a little more than that. It's, you know, there's some convolution involved. Once you do that, it's certain that you don't get a pseudo differential operator anymore when you take commutators, because simply it just this thing, dg. So dg minus, for example, dg minus dg. G inverse is still pseudo differential. For pseudo differential, this is still differential, pseudo differential. But you do something like you see D composed with G, they are not pseudo differential anymore, because a pseudo differential operator has this is probably called a pseudo local, and you see that this changed the support of singular support of distribution. So what I mean. What that means, G, just transition operators are not pseudo differential anymore. So you cannot work in that small category of pseudo differential operators. So we introduced a somewhat larger class, and we call it the cross product between G and the pseudo differential operators. It's a and we discussed a basic set of pseudo differential properties, like pseudo differential operators, and are called pseudo differential properties. And you see that if P is if any oh sorry, here's supposed to be A. If you know how to if you know something about this zeta functions of such a given an operator in this given any operator given anybody in space, and take a d inverse to the to some power, and if you are able to compute poles and residues, if you can say something about poles and residues, and then you're ready to talk to gave an index formula. And this is not a trouble in the commutative case, because you have simple poles, and the trace is nothing but the Wolodzki residue, and it's computable by symbols. But in the in this case, what we can say is this still, I mean, it's defined when the real part of this is big enough. So B, D is, in other words, D is and the power of D is large enough. You multiply a very small operator, so finally it will be trace class. But this is, and it's holomorphic in the domain, and then it's it extends to a meromorphic function on the whole plane, except that starting from some point, they began to have poles. And let me denote by this: the poles could have multiplicities, but you have control of the multiplicity. Here I gave an upper bound for the multiplicities. The dimension of the manifold plus dimension of the G. And in the commutative case, what we know is these poles are all at integer points, and there are no multiplicities, just simple poles. And okay, this is the first part. Okay, the second part is, and if you look at the residues, not only residues, and I don't know how to call it, you mark at zero, we just look at the point zero, and the higher residue or something, just multiply it with Z and take Z, that residue. And they are all decided by symbol of A and the symbol of operator D only. So in this, you can say, it's computable in terms of symbols, not because symbols are local data. You can, once you have your operator, you can see from your local data. You don't have to really work with convolutions, a lot of things. You cannot, very hard to predict. And all these things are decided by residues. And then this, the motivation for this is, these are things you really need in the Kalman-Lasky which look index formula. And with all these, what we can say is the Kalman-Lasky local index formula here, they make sense because you have a finite sum, and also you can manage to compute. But I'm not telling you how to compute. So I think this is what I want to talk about, but just to give you some idea what I meant, this is a Kalman-Lasky formula and a lot of definitions, but I think my time is up. So.
Thank you very much.